It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Episode 41, Mike, just off of our coverage this past Saturday at the StubHub Dignity Health Home Depot Center in Carson, California. What did you think of that?
Busy weekend. Another busy weekend of boxing seems to be.
We turned out a live show too, a bonus show this past Saturday, right?
You know, another little bonus for the fans.
Another little bonus for the fans. So if you guys haven't listened to, we actually put one out sometime Saturday night, early Sunday morning, with our immediate reaction to the DAZN Golden Boy card. But before we get into the reviews of last week's fights and preview this week's events, especially the Pacquiao-Thurman fight this upcoming Saturday, we actually have a special guest on the line who, you know, unfortunately, you know, before we jump into that, you know, we learned some sad news this morning that Sweet Pea Pernell Whitaker tragically passed away from some type of vehicle accident. I believe he was hit in Virginia Beach, right? Sometime last night. And I can't think, I don't know about you, Mike, I can't think of anybody else who'd be better to speak on Pernell, Pernell Whitaker. Than somebody who shared the ring with him, not just once, but twice. James Buddy McGirt, who's also a current trainer right now, Sergey Kovalev, is on the line. Thank you for joining us, man.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So, just like we mentioned, you know, Pernell tragically passed away last night. And, you know, where were you at the time when you first learned that news? Was it this morning, where you, you know, when you got up, did you see it on your phone? What was your immediate reaction?
You know, it's funny, this morning I was laying here and my phone was like, my text messages were going crazy. And I was like, who the hell is calling me so much? And I'm like, damn it, you know what I mean? It was like, I mean, who's texting me so much? And then I finally got up and looked at my phone and I seen the article that said Pernell Whitaker killed by car, and I'm like, what? You know what I mean? And, you know, it upset me. You know, I cried a little bit. I'm not going to lie, you know. And it really upset me, you know, I mean, he was young, you know, 55, you know, young man, might be the same age. And, you know, just from like that is just is tragic, man.
And, you know, just like we mentioned, you fought him twice in the 90s. I believe the first matchup was sometime in 1993, right?
Yes, sir.
And then the second matchup, the rematch, was in 1994. You know, just because, you know, obviously there's like there's always a new generation of fans in sports. So we have, you know, a range of ages who listen to this show. So if you can just kind of give us a talk us through that era, especially just before you fought Sweet Pea for the first time. What, you know, how did you guys come to terms to fight him? Because, I mean, of course, you know, during those years in the 90s, Pernell Whitaker was the pound for pound king. What we've heard from a lot of fans and other media personalities, whether people like it or not, he was essentially the Floyd Mayweather before Floyd Mayweather. Would you agree?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, he's better, Floyd. I mean, better. I mean, the man that can do it all, you know? And, you know, when I fought him the first time, I felt that I had to play like chess with him, you know? And the fight was close, but, you know, he won. But the second time, you know, my manager was telling me, you got to put pressure on him. He beat the hell out of me. So,
right.
You know, the second time he hit me so much, I thought I was surrounded. I was like, what the hell's going on around here? But, you know, you can't take nothing from him. The man was definitely one of the greats. And I don't think there'd be another Pernell for a minute.
You were you probably gave him one of his hardest fights, buddy?
You know, because, you know, I played the chess game with him. That's the only way you can beat Pernell. You can't put pressure on him because he'll eat you up. And if you try to outbox him, he's just going to walk you down. So you got to, when I fought him the first time, I had to make him see like he was looking in the mirror. He goes one way, I go that way. He goes one way, I go that way. You know, he never, you know, never fall into the trap, which made it a very interesting fight. You know what I mean? But the second time, I fought the dumbest fighter you could fight with. By then, I mean, I had to after the first four rounds because I knew it was behind and everybody was going to win by knockout. But, he was just, that night, he was on point that night.
When you were...
The second time we fought, he was on point. I got to give it to him.
When you were able to secure that first fight with him, what was one thing that you... During training camp, obviously, because you're fighting, at that time, the best fighter in the world, not just like at that moment, but for years, he was the best fighter in the world. Was there one thing that in that training camp, especially for the first fight, that you focused on in order to...
Yeah.
What was that one thing that okay, this is what he does. This
honestly, the one thing I focused on was his trainer, Georgie Bennett. See, you take his abilities... And you put it with Georgie Benton, who's one of the best trainers ever. You're not going to beat him. I mean, realistically, look at his record. He lost to Oscar, which he got robbed. Ramirez, which he got robbed.
Chavez.
So you go to the Trinidad fight, he was past his prime. And then you go to the fight where he dislocated his shoulder. He passed his prime. So when you sit back and look, ask yourself, who really beat a prime Pernell Whitaker? Nobody. Beat a prime Pernell Whitaker.
You went into the fight, buddy, with an injured left shoulder. You'd actually torn your rotator cuff, which you didn't know.
Yes, I didn't know. I tore it. Matter of fact, I tore it in. I had to make a mandatory in January. I tore the rotator in December, but they told me it was only tendonitis. So I went through training camp with that, defended my title in January. Then they told me, don't worry, it was tendonitis. And then I fought Pernell in March. So my rotator cuff was torn in December, and I didn't have the surgery until March. When I got to a real doctor, and he told me he had a torn rotator cuff. So, but that night, Pernell, and the key was, I felt to make it like a chess match, which it worked, but didn't work in the eyes of the judges, which is okay. I'm okay with that because I lost to one of the greats. So, I have nothing to be ashamed of. It was an honor to be in the ring with him, the honor, going there trying to outthink him. It was in Madison Square Garden, and it was, something that would always be remembered. We had Leroy Neiman do our posters, the great artist, and we had Larry Hazard, who was the New Jersey State Athletic Commission, at the time, refereed the fight.
Wow.
The time he refereed the fight, but he was still commissioner in New Jersey. So it was an interesting fight, and, it was in the big garden upstairs. And we had a lot of people in there, so it was a great night of boxing, and it's something that, would just be in the history books.
When you're fighting somebody who's unorthodox as Whitaker, what type of sparring did you do before the fight?
Like I said, you gotta play chess with him. You can't make no mistakes because he's sharp, and he'll stand right in front of you and make you miss. He won't go anywhere. So you gotta play chess with him. It's not easy, believe me, because he's so slick. He's standing in front of you. You're not going to hit him with two or three punches in a row. All right. So, you know, and he was a hell of a body puncher. You know what I mean? He wasn't a puncher on the chin, you know what I mean? But when he hit you to the body, believe me, you felt it.
Before that first fight in 1993, buddy, of course, you know, like you said, it was a chess match, and, you know, I'm sure you trained extremely hard, not just for that fight, but for the secondary rematch as well. But when you first got in the ring with Pernell Whitaker in 1993, that first time, was there anything, of course, you know, he's one of the best of all time, and you were honored to share the ring with him. Was there anything, as soon as you got in there, you were just like, oh, okay, this guy's definitely on another level now that you were able to...
No, not at all. No, to be honest with you, no. I really felt in my heart that I could outsmart him. You know what I mean? I thought I could really outsmart him. So I wasn't really saying, okay, this is... No, I didn't know. Now, after the fight, it was, you know, I was like, yo, he is the best. But before the fight, I was, you know, I didn't think that at all. But after the fight... He showed it. You know what I mean? So, after he showed it, I got to give it to him. I can't say, oh, well, this, that, you know, I got to give it to him.
Were you intimidated at all before that first fight? It doesn't sound like you were. It sounds like you were very confident. No. But, you know, because he was
like
who he
I
was.
Say, I wasn't worried about him. I was worried about Georgie Benton.
Right.
But after the fight, he got my respect. I respected him.
Right. And what?
You know what I mean? He was sick, man. He could fight. He could do it all.
And?
You know, people talk about Floyd. Tell those guys, and none of these guys today couldn't touch him. I mean, the man was phenomenal.
What did you think the Julio Cesar Chavez Whitaker, one of the biggest robberies of all time?
Oh, this, that, and when he fought Ramirez the first time. I mean, he boxed the hell out of Ramirez. And they took it from him. You know, so, I mean, that's boxing, you know, it happens, but the Chavez thing was definitely a robbery. They robbed him without a gun.
Buddy, what was your relationship with Pernell following the rematch, of course, even the first matchup? Like, you know, what was your guys' cordial relationship in terms of speaking terms and all that stuff? Did you guys?
I mean, we there was no bad feelings between us. You know what I mean? We see each other, we give each other hugs, we laugh and joke. There was no hard feelings, nothing like that. You know, even after we both retired, there was no hard feelings. You know. I mean, you know, I'm not the type of guy, okay, if you beat me, you beat me. I'm not going to be mad at you. You know, you was a better man that night, so I'm not going to be mad and not speak or say, oh, man, I got robbed. You won. End of story. And the funny thing is, when we were together, we wouldn't even talk boxing. We talk about everything but boxing.
Like what?
Just regular BS, nothing in particular.
Other sports?
No sports. Just talk about everybody that was in the room with us if you want to know the truth. But we never talked boxing. We never talked about our fight. Never.
When's the last time that you saw him or at least spoke to him before his tragic passing yesterday?
Wow. It's been... Wow, I would say, I was on tour for Floyd.
Wow.
I guess I'm the same for now.
And what was that conversation like? Do you remember?
Yeah, I said, what you drinking? And he told me I bought him a drink and then he bought me a drink.
what was the drink of choice that night?
Kanye.
For both of you?
Yeah, we both were drinking Kanye. I offered him a cigar. He said no, so I smoked the cigar with my Kanye.
That sounds like a good night, buddy.
Then we just sat there, talked trash with everybody in Everybody in the room. Everybody at the bar. We talked about everybody.
Buddy, now that you're... Sorry?
Hey, me, him, and Mark Brennan. We're talking about everybody.
Buddy, now as a trainer, if somebody walked into your gym with an unorthodox style, you know, like Purnell, how would you implement yourself as a trainer?
I would, I'm not gonna try to make a fight like Purnell, because that's not gonna happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because Purnell, as you know, he's sort of like, you know, like Ray Leonard and him, you know, he's in the class by himself. You know, I would just take a little bit from them and try to add it on to the guy, and then take the guy's biggest asset to make it work for him. And I'm not going to try to do like Canelo, because Canelo was, you know, he mastered what he did. And he had a master trainer, which made it even double hard to beat him.
Buddy, so you as a two-division world champion, and you had a 16-year career, you had a long career in the sport of boxing, which isn't easy to do, especially getting to the world championship level. Would you say that Purnell Whitaker was your most memorable opponent in your career, in all of your fights?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that. You know, at one point it was Simon Brown. But then when I fought Purnell, you know, our first fight was not only for the welterweight championship, but it was pound for pound who was the best fighter in the world at that time. I mean, who was number one? And then in the rematch, you know, I've always wanted to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated magazine. And I was on it in the rematch, but the only difference was I was getting punched in the face by Purnell.
I'm sure you still have that magazine, don't you? Even though you're getting punched in the face?
It says the best. It has them. It says the best. And it was. I got to give it to him.
Would you say he's the greatest defensive fighter of all time?
One of them, without a doubt. And there was a guy, I think his name was Nicolini Loche. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right.
Right.
Was a southpaw. Unbelievable. He just put his hands behind his back and make guys mess. But what made Purnell different than most guys was Purnell was sitting in the pocket. He wouldn't move around, and he would sit right there in front of you. See, that's a lot of people tend to forget. Purnell didn't need to use his legs and dunno. He'd sit right in front of you and be like, take your best shot. And you couldn't hit him. I mean, he would sit right there. He'd stand on the quarter. And when you got done punching, he'd still be standing on the quarter.
Right. Buddy, besides your fights with Purnell, which one was your favorite of any all the opponents that Purnell fought besides your fights, of course? Which one does it pop into your mind every time you think about it?
That he fought or I fought?
That Purnell fought, besides your fights.
I would say when he beat the hell out of Chavez and didn't get the decision. And when he beat Ramirez and didn't get the decision.
Right.
I mean, he was superb both nights, but, you know, he came up, they gave him the short end of the stick. But he came back against Ramirez and, you know, I point him easily. He never got the rematch with Chavez, you know what I mean? And, when he fought Trinidad, you know, it was over by then. But it's a funny thing. There's a kid from Long Island, which, you know, named Jake the Snake Rodriguez.
Right.
And he was getting ready to fight Purnell, and his manager slash trainer came to me in the store. I was in a store in Brentwood, I'll never forget. And he goes, we're going to do what you couldn't do. I said, what's that? He said, no, we're going to beat him, we're going to knock him out.
Wow.
I said, listen, man, whatever you're drinking, stop. He goes, you watch, buddy. I'm like, listen, I don't have to watch. I know what's going to happen. So Camille's going to knock your man out. I'm telling you. Because you'll see, you'll see. I'm like, all right, I wish you the best, but if you're looking for a knock, I will come out. And you can't punch. Good luck. And it was like a sparring session for Pernell. You know, Pernell beat him easy, stopped him. I mean, he was very, very, people who really, I would say people who don't really know boxing, but, you know what I mean? He's very underestimated. But the man, I'm telling you, the man was something else.
Buddy, since you, of course, have, you know, shared the ring with Pernell, like I mentioned, not once but twice, and now that he's no longer with us, if you can, if somebody asked you to describe Pernell in one word, what would that word be?
Great.
That's pretty, right on point. Yeah. Well, like I mentioned, buddy, you know, like, I'm sure the news shocked you, just like you said, just as much as it shocked the boxing world. And, you know, our condolences obviously go out to Pernell's family and friends. You know, kind of transitioning to your current news cycle at the moment, or not, at least not this one, but you were just recently inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame, right? How was that?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, it was greater than winning the championship of the world.
Oh, wow.
You know, because you know you have boxing fans, but you really don't understand, you know, how many boxing fans you really have until you get inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Right.
You know, these fans, just they show their appreciation. That they spend their money to come out there. They stand in the hot sun. They stand outside the hotels. They stand outside everywhere just to get an autograph. Now, a lot of guys get mad. They go, oh, buddy, the guy's going to sell the autograph. Who cares? Who cares if they sell the autograph? I don't care. But they're making money off you. Then you should feel good that they're making money off you. Because remember this. They paid their money to come here to see you.
Right.
They paid their money to either come see you fight or watch you fight on pay-per-view. So if a guy asks me for a picture, and I sign the picture, and he gets $20 for it, he should have gotten more. I'm not mad at him. And if I've had a few champions, you know, that say, man, you crazy. And I look at them like, honestly, my whole attitude towards them has changed. My respect for them has changed. Because, you know, you come outside that hotel at 6 in the morning, and you got people standing in line for an autograph. How can you tell them no? Because you worried how much money they're going to get for a picture that you signed. I mean, you tell me, how does that add up?
Right.
And you call yourself a champion. It's just, to me, this is my opinion. To me, you know what I mean? I think they should be ashamed of themselves, right? I mean, these people spend their hard-earned money. They come from all over the world to be there. Right. They pay hundreds of, you know, almost $1,000 to spend a weekend with you. So if they make $20 or $50 off a picture, who cares? I mean, who cares? You know what I mean? So, I mean, I just don't get it. You know what I mean? That's my philosophy. You know what I mean? A lot of, like I said, a lot of them look at me like, man, you shouldn't be selling that. I'm like, who cares, man? I don't give a damn. You go to the school, and it's a long line of people waiting for your autograph. How can you tell them no, because you're going to make money off of them? How can you do that?
Right.
I mean, like, really, how can you do that to them? But I'm seeing guys do it, and it, like, it turns my stomach, man. Because my thing is, if it wasn't for the fans, we wouldn't be there. when you think about it, who wants to do that? I mean, so like when I come up to the hotel, there's 50 people there, I sign everybody's picture. Like, buddy, you know, you have to do, you know, I said, so listen, if I got to be somewhere at 10 o'clock, come get me at 9:30 so I can sign pictures for a half hour. That's all. You know, I'm not going to sign 10 until other people wait. Now, I can't do that. I have to sit there and sign everybody's picture.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because, you know, listen, I'm not standing in the sun to get nobody's picture. I don't give a damn who you are. And I'm not saying my hot son, you know what I mean, waiting for your autograph, and then you tell me no.
Right.
I mean, I'm like, wait a minute, man. I expect my mom to come in, you telling me no. There's something wrong with that picture. You know what I mean? But, you know, this is boxing, baby.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? These boxes are, it takes all kinds, I guess.
So, buddy, you know, just to kind of list your, because obviously you've been your current trainer in the boxing world right now, and the world champions that have trained under your tutelage is Byron Mitchell, Vernon Forrest, Antonio Tarver, Arturo Gatti, and then you're currently training Sergey Crusher Kovalev. How's that been since both of you, since that pairing came together?
You know what? It's funny. I got a call from his manager to train another guy. Then Johnny Beck. So I started training with Johnny Beck, and everything was going lovely. And then the manager says to me, after about a week, he calls me up. He goes, I got a question to ask you, buddy. I said, go ahead, what is it? He goes, would you be interested in working with Sergey? Sure. And the funny thing is, when the word got out, a lot of people was calling me, but no one had nothing positive to say. Everything that came out their mouth was negative. But the first day he came to the gym to train with me, he sat me down to discuss his, you know, his loss to Alvarez. And he took full responsibility for the loss. He didn't point the finger at nobody. He took the blame. As far as his training, his diet, losing the weight, he said, buddy, I take the blame. It's all my fault. So right then and there, I said, you got to respect the guy. He could have blamed anybody in his camp, but he took the blame. I said, buddy, you got to, you know what I mean? I said, I said, I'll give it a shot. He said, okay. And it worked out great. And so far, it worked out great. You know, everybody's like, good luck, good luck, good luck. It ain't going to work. I said, well, let's see what happens. I mean, and then, you know, when he told me what he did wrong in training, getting ready for the Alvarez fight, you know, there'd be days. I'd be like, all right, that's it. And he looked at me like, what do you mean that's it? That's it. You can go home now. He goes, but I want to do, you can do it tomorrow. Right now, go home. You know what I mean? So sometimes you got to protect the fighter from themselves, you know? Because they want, they feel, sometimes, I told a guy today, sometimes less is better. You don't always got to work, kill yourself every day.
Right.
Especially when you get over 30. You ain't, when you're 30, you ain't 20 no more. So you got to be smart.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, but when I got in the gym, the first thing I looked at was his legs. I wanted to see how his legs were when they moved around the ring. And his legs were good. His reaction time was good. I'm like, oh, he's all right. He's still got some more miles on him.
But I heard in an interview, before, I think after he fought Alvarez, how you watched a video of him and told him to go back to the amateur style.
You know, it's something funny. It's how you say that. One day he sent me a text message with a video. I'm like, what is this? He goes, can you just look at it? It's me from the amateurs. So I looked at it. Then I called him up. I said, can I ask you a question? He's like, yeah. I said, what happened to that guy? He said, buddy, when I started knocking everybody out, I got away from that. I said, well, then let's go back to that. because you can do it all night long. So, no, you don't have to be crusher all the time. At the end of the day, you got to get the W. You know what I mean? So, he worked on it, then I added a little bit to it, and it showed him the fight. I said, if you get him hurt, don't go crazy, don't be stupid. Just continue. If he's taking the bait, just keep feeding it to him. That's what he did.
And, you know, obviously, buddy, you know, Sergey's name has been, mentioned alongside, you know, arguably the biggest star in the sport at the moment for at least the past month or so, in Canelo Alvarez. Recently, we've heard that Sergey's going to go in another direction and fight in Russia, Anthony Yard, in August. You know, can you kind of shed some light on what was going on and what you can say about the
You want to know the truth? You want to know the truth?
Yeah.
I know just about as much as you do.
Oh, wow. What did you think, as a trainer, though, what did you think when Canelo was mentioned as an opponent for Sergey going up to 175? You know, that first... Did you think it was a joke, or when it actually started becoming...
No. Canelo was one of the fight, man. You know, to me, he's one of the best. You know what I mean? So, if he fights at 75, it doesn't mean he's going to come in at 75.
Right.
You know what I mean? He should come in around 68, 70. You know? People say, well, you still got 7 pounds. I'm like, yeah, but you get some guys put on 13 pounds overnight.
Right.
So, well, bigger is not always better. You get half pitching. The late, great Howie Abbott told me, when Emil Griffith fought Dick Tiger for the middleweight championship, Emil Griffith woke up 147 pounds. He drank water till he got to 150. So he weighed 150, Dick Tiger weighed 160, and Emil Griffith beat him. He has a 10-pound weight difference at the weigh-in. So you can imagine what it was at the fight. So I think Canelo's testing himself, which I'm not mad at him. It's good to challenge yourself sometimes. I mean, you know, he beat Danny Jacobs easy. I mean, he's beating these guys easy now. So, he feels he needs that challenge. So maybe that's the challenge that he feels he needs and he wants. You know, he wants to go down as one of the greats. So I'm not just sugar on it. Then he fell down in the land. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, Roberto Duran came from 135 to 160.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's not like it could be done. So a lot of people, you know, they're sleeping on the weight thing, though. Don't get fooled by the weight thing. Because at the end of the day, if you can fight, you can fight. It doesn't matter how much you wear, the other guy wins. You know, so Michael Spinks, Larry Holmes.
Were you?
I mean, so if you can fight, you can fight. So he's got some arm, he's going to be 10 pounds heavier. Okay, and what's your point?
Were you,
you know what I mean?
Were you able to have a conversation with Sergey at all about Canelo?
No, we never talk about it. We're focusing on, just getting in shape, and whoever they close the deal with, then we just focus on that. I mean, I'm not going to start talking about Canelo, get his hopes up high, and then bam, there's no fight with Canelo.
Right.
So we just, that's all, we're just going to go on the gym and train until we find out what's happening. He's like, all right, you got it. So that's where we are right now.
I believe the Anthony Yard fight was confirmed on the weekend, though, by Frank Warren. Is that true?
Which fight?
The Kovalev against Anthony Yard in Russia.
Yeah, Frank Warren had mentioned in an interview that that fight was confirmed for Russia in August. Is he lying, or is he misleading, or
jumping the gun a bit?
Is he jumping the gun?
I couldn't tell you. I mean, I really, honestly, if I knew, I'd tell you. I really don't know, because I heard the same thing, right? Then I hear that they're still negotiating the money. So it's like, I don't know what the hell's going on, man.
You're just ready to go in terms of training, right?
Yes, exactly. You know, they're talking about fighting Canelo since September.
Right.
So we still got to start getting ready. No matter who, we still got to start getting ready.
Right.
We can't be sitting around BSing or get caught, you know, with our hand in the cookie jar.
Right. Exactly.
It's a good analogy.
Well, you know, buddy, we appreciate it. You jumping on the show here on the last round, especially giving your memories and speaking on your two fights with the late great Pernell Sweet Pea Whitaker, which, like I mentioned, is unfortunate that he tragically passed the way he did at such a young age. But you know, like I said, we appreciate you jumping on the show and then giving your memories to our listeners in regards to Sweet Pea. And also kind of talking about your current status in the game as a trainer, training Sergey Kovalev and all the world champions that you've trained in the past. If you want to go ahead and plug anything you got coming up, any younger fighters you have, or, you know, of course you have Sergey or anything else you have coming up in terms of maybe, you know.
Yes, I got August 17th, I got a kid named Adam Lopez. I have another middleweight named Johnny Beck, and if you ask me how to pronounce his last name, I'd mess it up. So, but they're fighting here in California, and two future world champions, no doubt.
Where in California?
Is it a Bank Arena or a bank? I don't know. I don't know. We're going
to. Oh, is it the Top Rank card in LA? That soccer stadium?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that should be interesting. That's a new venue for boxing, so that should be interesting.
Two future world champions, without a doubt.
Awesome.
We'll hopefully see you there, buddy. We should be going to the card on the 17th.
All right.
So thanks again for giving us your time and coming on the show.
Yeah, and best of luck to you and your fighters and Sergey Kovalev especially, and as I mentioned, thank you for coming on and sharing your memories of Pernell Whitaker, buddy. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
You take care.
All right. All right.
Man, what of a, you know, it was, I love that interview. You know, it's unfortunate that, you know, we had to talk about Pernell passing, you know, which sucks. You know, he was a young guy. He was a young guy, and just like I asked him, you know, what's one word that you would, somebody says, like, what do you describe Pernell in one word? And he just said, great, you know, straight to the point. He's right.
Yeah, buddy just comes across as one of those guys that you could just sit down and talk to all day.
Have a beer with?
You know, one of those other guys.
Cognac, just like you said.
Yeah. Have a cognac and a cigar, and you know, you could just sit there all day. With that interview, could have gone on for hours and hours and hours, yeah. And we could have just talked about so many different things. And I think, in a weird way, I actually think Pernell Whitaker's actually, I was going to actually ask him, you know, is he kind of underrated? Because you hear about other fighters like, you know, Chavez and greats like that.
I mean,
more than you hear about Pernell Whitaker. I think it's only really the boxing hardcore who really understand how great he was.
No, you're right. And he was the pound for pound king, undisputed for years.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like ever since like Floyd kind of became essentially inactive here the last, you know, couple years, maybe four or five years. You haven't had that one person. I mean, maybe it was Andre Ward at the time, but even then, like, you haven't really had that one person who has had that claim to the throne.
No. Not like Floyd did.
Not like Floyd did or Pernell did.
Yeah, because you couldn't really argue it.
Right.
With other people, you know, you could say at the minute, like, you could say Crawford, I could say Lomachenko, and
someone else could say Canelo.
Then you'd say it, and you'd be like, yeah, that's fair. I can't really think of anyone who runs him even close.
So, you know, like I said, it's unfortunate. I keep repeating that because it sucks. It sucks that he, you know, passed away, and like, you know, and it was something that obviously could have been prevented. I know he got hit by a vehicle, and it was nighttime, and you know, I haven't really looked at the details, but maybe I don't think it was a drunk driver or anything like that, right?
They haven't said at the minute, but I'm just hoping that now maybe people will go back and, you know, recognize how good he was. And rewatch his fights, watch the Chavez fight.
The younger generation. That's why I told Buddy, like, you know, there's obviously new generations of boxing fans all the time, you know, can take us through those matches you had with him, you know, just before, during, you know. So I'm glad we were able to get Buddy on, and we thank him again for jumping on. But jumping in, you know, fight reviews real quick. This past Friday, the 12th, from the Edion Arena in Osaka, Japan, on ESPN Plus, the rematch, Murata versus Rob Brant. Murata gets the second round TKO stoppage for the WBA middleweight title. Didn't you choose Brant and I chose Murata?
Yeah, meaning he came back and got revenge. You know?
Lost again, Mike. It's over.
Yeah. Well, Rob Brant, I think, expected it to run. Well, I did as well. I thought it was going to be, no, he was going to stand in the trenches again, and they were both going to try and slug it out. And Rob Brant was, you know, technically last time kind of schooled him, where Murata decided to keep more on the outside and really just like peppered him and put him away. Made it look pretty easy, to be honest with you.
They're going to run it back, though.
A third fight? Yeah, I could see that.
They're absolutely going to do it.
I don't know where else. I don't know whether Murata, though, because of the fans he has and, you know, the money, like we touched on last time, you know, they were trying to draw Triple G over there for big paydays.
Tokyo Dome.
I think they may try to avoid it.
Yeah.
And I don't know where Rob Brant's going to go from here. But
they're going to do a trilogy. Now that they both split, they both had W's.
Money talks. So
Hell yeah. And then also this past Saturday, we won't dive into this deep because, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we did do an on-location bonus live show from the StubHub Center, Home Depot Center, Dignity Health, whatever it's called now, for the Vargas-Kameda fight for the WBC Super Bantamweight title on Golden Boy on DAZN this past Saturday, where Abe Gonzalez from nyfights.com was our guest. He jumped on the show right there at the arena. We gave our immediate analysis and reaction. Literally, right as the event was over, we started recording, where we went over a couple of the fights.
We could see the ring being taken down.
We do, yeah. As we were recording, the whole ring was getting taken down and, you know, from top to bottom. So, you know, we'll just kind of mention the winners real quick of each bout. But if you want to listen to our analysis from that fight, which was actually very good because there was actually three of us at that time, our bonus show is up on all the podcasting platforms, and you can go back and take a listen. But like I mentioned, Ray Vargas got the unanimous decision win over Kameda, retained his WBC Super Bantamweight title. Ronnie Rios, I don't call it an upset. I think because I picked him. We both picked him. Ronnie Rios stops Diego De La Hoya and gives him his first professional loss for the vacant WBA Gold Super Bantamweight title, which was my favorite fight of the night.
Beautiful stoppage.
It was awesome.
If you haven't seen it, you should be able to find it on Twitter or somewhere.
Or watch on DAZN. Yeah. Watch on DAZN or the DAZN YouTube. They put on some great highlights on there. Joette Gonzalez stays undefeated, 23-0 over a six-round KO over Tino Avila. And that was for the vacant WBO Global and WBA Continental Featherweight Championship. And then Joette even called out Shakur Stevenson and JoJo Diaz Jr. after the fight. So that was a kind of cool to get some heat going there between all the parties involved. That was kind of cool. This was an upset.
Mm-hmm.
Roger Gutierrez in the first round stops Rocky Hernandez, who was, you know, looked at as a up and coming, would you say prospect or contender? I mean, because he was 28-0 at the time.
Yeah, they were definitely pushing him. Bit of a prospect. We spoke to, I won't name names, but we spoke to a boxer who was sparring with him who said he thinks that Rocky maybe dropped too much weight.
Probably.
Beforehand, which,
yeah,
you know,
that's true.
He had no legs. He literally got knocked down and got up and had jelly legs.
Yeah.
So that, you know, could maybe explain it.
So, you know, we'll see. But hopefully he can bounce back. He's still kind of a young kid. So, and then also friend of the show, just like Ronnie, his younger brother, Alexis Rocha, Lex, gets the eighth round stoppage over Berlin Abreu. That was actually a tough fight for him. You can tell he was working hard, but he kept coming and coming and coming, and he finally got the stoppage. So Lex remains undefeated at 14-0 in a welterweight clash. So congratulations to Lex on that W. And also moving on, also on Saturday, right? from the O2 Arena in Greenwich, London, UK, on ESPN Plus. The fight that everybody kind of saw at least one commercial for. Daniel Dubois gets the 5th round KO over Nathan Gorman and for the British heavyweight title. What'd you think?
Good fight, Daniel. But Dubois looked better than I expected. I actually picked Gorman on this.
You did. And I think I picked Dubois because I was like, I don't know. I think that's who the machine's behind in terms of hype. That they obviously, you can tell they wanted him to win.
Yeah, I mean, I said last week, it kind of reminded me of Dubois being like an Anthony Joshua, very robotic, kind of behind the jab. Gorman, more of the Andy Ruiz, good punches, surprisingly fast feet, fast hands. But Dubois just kind of worked Gorman out. We could see that Gorman was kind of, coming in with a jab and then kind of following it up with an uppercut. Dubois kind of changed his stance a little bit, changed the way he was stepping in and stepping out, worked him out, and then just his power. He finished him. The punch hit Gorman kind of like on the top of the head, but he was just so strong, so powerful that, he was out of there. Dubois looked good, a lot better, stepped up in, stepped up from, kind of C-level fighters. Gorman maybe more of a B-level. And then hopefully now he can go on to, and I'd like to see him fight somebody like a Derek Chisora, someone kind of a name, but who's coming down the ladder as Dubois going back up.
You think he'd be ready for something like somebody like a Chisora, right? Like next fight or maybe?
Well, Chisora is very robotic, isn't he? Chisora kind of like just puts his head down, comes forward, just kind of swings wild punches. So, right. I think if Dubois is what they think he's going to be, then he should be beating people like Chisora. Or maybe even the winner of Dave Allen, Dave Price, which is this weekend.
That's true.
So all those really are British level now. Right. So if Dubois is going to end up being the world contender, he's still very young, so they could feed him some more styles, a few southpaws, people like that, tall fighters, small fighters, strong fighters, just to get him well-rounded before he steps up to world level. And don't necessarily have to push him, but I would like to see him step up a little bit.
Well, we're going to see. He's still, they're obviously putting a lot of stock into him, so it's going to be interesting to see how he develops and how he keeps going in his career. Also on that card, Joe Joyce gets the unanimous decision win over veteran heavyweight Bryant Jennings. I still think Joe Joyce, and I think we talked about this on Saturday at the StubHub Center, Joe Joyce still needs to work on a lot of stuff.
He looks a little bit better now. He's been trained by Adam Booth.
Right. He left Abel Sanchez.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought he looked a little bit better. He's still he's just so very, so robotic, so slow. It's like he's fighting underwater. It's just so weird. He kind of like windmills his punches in. But the weird thing is,
like Anthony Joshua, those training videos, he was training in the water. Bam.
But it works for him.
It does.
And I don't think there's a nickname of a fighter which is suited so much the juggernaut. He literally just comes forward like Terminator, takes punches, but it just it doesn't affect him. Like, he just comes forward, just throws punches. Everything about him just seems just so odd. His stance, he kind of like crosses his legs sometimes, which you shouldn't do as a boxer.
I noticed that. I was like, what is he doing?
And then he throws wild punches that you can kind of read coming, and then they're so slow, but they still connect. I just don't understand, but it works for him. Wilder. Wilder does so many things wrong, but it works.
Yeah, he finds a way to win.
So, at the minute, he's 10-0, I think 9 KOs.
Yeah.
Bryant Jennings did look good, and people have to remember that Bryant Jennings lost to Oscar Rivas.
He did.
In the 12th round.
That's right.
But he was up on the scorecard until he got knocked out.
That's right. People don't remember that. They don't remember that. Joe Joyce needs to add the word wild to his nickname. The Wild Juggernaut.
He definitely is, yeah. Very wild.
The very wild Joe Joyce. And then fight previews this Friday, the 19th, from the MGM National Harbor in Oxon Hill, Maryland, on ESPN Plus. ESPN Plus just churning him out, trying to compete with his own, maybe. Teofimo Lopez, the Teofimo Express, the takeover, is back. 13-0 over, all right, you got this pronunciation, do it.
Miyoshi Nakatani.
Excuse
18-0.
Me. Excuse me. So a battle of undefeated fighters here.
And a battle to fight Richard Conley.
That's true. That's what I was getting to. The winner, obviously top rank, wants Teofimo to win. That's the whole plan here, assuming he wins. But essentially the winner is in line to get a title shot against, like you said, Richard Comey. And then the winner of that potential fight fights the winner of Lomachenko and Luke Campbell.
For all the belts.
For all the belts. So that, you know, we're looking at a unification matchup sometime next year, maybe in a year or so.
They said sometime after the Super Bowl in a Bob Arum interview. So depending on injuries and...
February, March.
Yeah, so sometime around there.
So the Super Bowl over here, for our out-of-the-country listeners, like the UK, obviously. Super Bowl is American football.
Fake football.
To you, fake football. To you. But I'm sure a lot of boxing fans in the United States are American football fans, so you probably just turned them all off. We just lost our listening viewership.
All five of them.
Come on. Come on, Mike. First you forget the third Mike at the StubHub Center. And now you're chasing away our listeners. Come on. Stay for me. Don't stay for Mike. So, but, you know, obviously, like I mentioned, the plan is for Teofimo to get the win, fight Comey, beat Comey, for Lomachenko to fight Campbell, beat Campbell, and then Teofimo and Loma fight for a unification matchup next year.
I hope so. I really want to see that.
I mean, yeah, that's intriguing, obviously, especially in terms of names, you know, Top Rank. I mean, Top Rank does a really great job in building up their fighters. I know people say, like, you know, politics, they don't want to, you know, Bob Arum doesn't really like to make matchups across the aisle and, you know, vice versa. I mean, all the promoters, they all have, everybody has their agenda. I get it. It's a business. You have to make
wrong side of the street.
Wrong side of the street. I freaking hate that analogy. I freaking hate it. But I mean, you know, you got to give it the Top Rank and then how they build up their fighters. You know, they utilize the platforms and, you know, marketing techniques. And I mean, look at Teofimo Lopez. You know, how long has he been, you know, essentially where his name has been relevant, like in terms of, like, you know, a lot of people know who he is now.
Yeah.
How long has it been? Like maybe over a year?
Yeah, I'd say a year to 18 months. But Tio, he can see, you can see that he knows the business.
No, oh, yeah. He's got the personality.
Yeah, he's got the personality. He's got those knockouts. He's got the showreel. You know, he literally does interview after interview after interview. He pops up on different podcasts.
Yep.
Goes to all the events.
Along, you know, with his dad.
Yeah, you know, he's an all-in-one promotion, you know. He's
self-promoter.
You know, he's a promoter's dream. He really is.
So, we'll see how that pans out. But I like this matchup. You know, I'm picking Teofimo. I think he has all the, no, not just because he has a hype behind him, but, you know, he's good. Like, he's got recognizable talent when you watch him. Like, he's good.
And this will be his first main event, right?
It will be. It will be. So
big step up.
Big step up. Who you got? Lopez, are we both going Teofimo?
Teofimo Lopez by KO.
I don't know. I think it is a year of the upsets, Mike. You never know.
That's very true. Yeah, it's a year of the upsets. But I think this one should go the way that, you know, Bob Arum wants it to. And I think, you know, all the fans want it to. I think Teofimo Lopez, he's had a good camp, you know, listening to a few of his recent interviews. He's got a nutritionist now. He's settled. He's married, you know, and doesn't have the drama with his family that he was having earlier in the year. So I think everything's going to go as planned. Teofimo Lopez knockout, I think a few rounds to work him out, and I think round four, round five, I think he'll steal the show as usual.
Absolutely. And then wrapping up this Saturday from the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas on Fox pay-per-view in the United States, Keith Thurman, undefeated 29-0, goes up against the legend Manny Pacquiao for the WBA Super World Welterweight title. This is a great matchup.
Yeah,
this is a great matchup. I think I've already said, especially in our bonus show from this past weekend, I picked Pacquiao. Who are you picking?
Because there's no VADA testing, Pacquiao.
What? Oh, yeah, listen to our VADA conversation over the weekend in the bonus show. You know, that way you can get a good laugh out of it.
Just Nevada testing.
Nevada testing. Nevada. Oh, I see what you did there.
There we go.
You know what? Let's just end the show now after that. That's a great... No, not yet. I like it, man. Pacquiao's about 40, 41. Is he 41 already?
I think he's 40, maybe 41 40? This year.
So, and then Keith Thurman's what, 30, 31?
Maybe? Yeah.
They're about 10 years apart.
I'm going Pacquiao because I think that he just looked good in his last couple of fights. You know, didn't get rid of Broner, but I thought he looked good.
He looked great against Matisse.
Whereas Thurman, you know, he was out for a long time, came back, fought Josecito Lopez, actually got rocked in, was it like round 7, had to kind of hang on. And then it's just like Keith Urban just seems to have that thing about him now where he's, you know, he's made money and then he just, like, how much does he want it?
I get your point, but I still think that Thurman still has that drive. And he can, I know, you know, his inactivity the last couple of years sucked and he got injured and stuff. So, you know, it's unfortunate because before that he was fighting a lot of the top guys and he was in the rhythm. So obviously that comes into people's minds in terms of like, oh, you know, how's he going to do it? What's going to happen? But I still think that Thurman has that competitive mentality, especially now that he's going to be in his first pay-per-view fight against a legendary fighter such as Manny Pacquiao. I think Thurman's still going to bring it. And I know people, you know, like obviously like me and you are still picking Pacquiao, but I think Thurman is definitely going to put up a fight. I think it's an intriguing matchup nonetheless.
I think you're right. I think that, you know, going into a fight of this magnitude should really bring the best out of Keith Thurman. Mm-hmm. Just depending on the injuries, the time off he's had, stuff like that, you know, what effect has he had on his body? Even though he's the younger fighter, you know, Pacquiao hasn't really had that too many injuries over that period of time. He's also been, you know, active over the last couple of years. I just think that unless Thurman can really, really, really keep Pacquiao on the outside and doesn't let him come in and, you know, and get off those combinations. And, you know, Pacquiao comes in on very, you know, different angles, comes in, throws lots of punches in bunches, gets back out. So Thurman's going to need a really, really good jab just to keep him off.
Right.
You know, try and stop him from coming in. So, but I think Pacquiao's just going to win. I think his experience, the speed, the power, Nevada testing, you know, I think
Nevada testing
is going to, you know, go in his favor. And then I think it's going to be him. And then after that, I think we'll honestly see an Amir Khan, Manny Pacquiao fight.
The fight,
huge money in Saudi Arabia.
The fight we're all waiting for.
Yeah.
The king is back. King Khan. And you know, you never know. He could beat Pacquiao and become again best pound for pound fighter in the world. Okay, this is a long con. A long con from
there,
Amir Khan.
See?
I'm telling you, it's going to work out. And then just quickly naming off the undercard on that Fox pay-per-view card this Saturday. Caleb Plant goes up against Mike Lee for the IBF super middleweight title. Louis Neary goes up against Juan Carlos Payano for the WBC silver bantamweight title. Ugas, coming off his last fight against Porter, which was a great performance, goes up against Omar Figueroa Jr. That should be a fun fight.
This next one will be a war.
Yeah. Sergey Lipnitz and John Molina Jr. John Molina Jr. has been on the show before. So going back and listen to that show, where, you know, he's a great interview. And then also I always have trouble pronouncing his name.
Efe Ajagba.
Ajagba goes up against Ali Aaron Demirizin.
Yeah, that's what I would have said, yeah.
So
up and coming heavyweight for anyone who likes the heavyweight scene. Big, powerful heavyweight there in Efe Ajagba. Definitely one to watch.
That's a pretty fun card.
Yeah, I think it's a good card, and definitely, like we touched on, the Lipinets, John Molina. If anything may steal the show, that would be the fight, I would imagine.
Yeah, and then also this weekend from the O2 Arena, again in the London, UK, on DAZN, Dillian White and Oscar Rivas go toe-to-toe in a heavyweight matchup. And also, like you mentioned earlier, his name, Derek Chisora, goes up against Artur Spilka, who people might remember from that crazy knockout from Deontay Wilder in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center. That was wild. And then, like you mentioned, David Allen and David Price. So it's a bunch of heavyweight matchups here, huh? On
that trio
card.
Heavyweights, yeah.
Trio heavyweight matchups. So if you love your heavyweight boxing, catch the DAZN card this weekend from London, UK.
David Price with the hardest right hand in boxing, you always say.
Forget it.
He hides it well.
Forget it.
He hides that right hand very well.
Forget it. But like I said, you know, thank you again for listening, wherever you're listening at, to episode 41 of The Last Round. And like I said, we did our first on-location show from the StubHub Center at the Golden Boy Card on DAZN this past Saturday in L.A., out here in Southern California. So go back to and listen to our bonus show with Abe Gonzalez of NYFights.com, who jumped on and also gave his immediate reaction to the fights. It was a quick, you know, 25, 30-minute episode. But like I said, Mike, where can they find us if they want to follow us?
At The Last Round 12 on Twitter, at The Last Round 12 on Instagram. We should have hopefully more trips to events. And then also we'll try and do some gym tours, take the equipment with us, speak to the fighters, speak to the trainers. So if you're on Twitter, you could just message us, tell us where you'd like to see, what more things you'd like to see, stuff you don't like to see, I guess. Also include that. We're always improving.
Yep. Absolutely. And then as we're ending the show here, we want to dedicate this to the memory of Sweet Pea Parnell Whitaker. You know, may he rest in power. And condolences once again to his family and friends. And so for Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.